and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Catherine Irving. On this week's recap, harvested Kodiak brown bears are getting bigger, according to a new study.
There's no better bear to get, in a lot of their opinions, than a Kodiak brown bear, just because of the sheer size of them.
More on that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at KodiakHealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
First up, the results are in from this year's elections for the Kodiak Electric Association Board of Directors. All three incumbents will retain their seats. According to a press release sent out last week, the elected board members are Ron Akerigi, Tyler Cornelis, and Ben Milstein. There were three seats open this year out of the nine total seats on the KEA board, with four candidates running. Akerigi is the current vice chairman of the Electric Cooperative. Tyler Cornelis is the environmental programs director at the Kodiak Era Native Association, and he's been on the board since 2020. Ben Milstein is the founder of Kodiak Island Brewing Company. According to a statement mailed out to voters, he has been on KEA's board for over 15 years. Coast Guard-based Fire Chief Aaron Griffin was the only candidate who had not already served on the board. He received the fewest votes and was not elected. The three elected candidates will serve on the Kodiak Electric Association board for another 3 years before their seats are once again up for grabs. Michael Brecken will also continue to serve as the chairman after the board elected its officers last week. Next up, out of the seven board members on the Alaska Board of Fisheries, only one is an active commercial fisherman. A bill awaiting Governor Mike Dunleavy's signature could make it easier for the industry to be better represented on the board by relaxing conflict of interest rules. Currently, state law says that a member of the Alaska Board of Fisheries or the Board of Game who has a personal or a financial conflict of interest can't, quote, vote, deliberate, or otherwise participate, end quote, in the board's business on the matter. Under House Bill 33, conflicted members still couldn't vote, but they could at least participate in the board's discussion. According to data provided by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, compiled from 19 years of meetings, recusals due to conflicts of interest were common on the Board of Fisheries. On average, there's about one recusal for every eight proposals considered. Typically, it's board members who fish commercially or are sport fish guides in an area that is discussed during the Board of Fisheries meeting. Representative Louise Stutz of Kodiak says the bill would help level the playing field between commercial, subsistence, and sport user groups.
But very rarely do you ever hear of a sport fisherman being conflicted out or a subsistence person being conflicted out, but you regularly hear of a comfish guy getting conflicted out. And consequently, it's very difficult to get a board member for comfish because they say, why should I? I'll be conflicted out.
Based on 2017 subsistence fishing and hunting data from the department, commercial fisheries account for more than 98% of the statewide harvest in Alaska. The remaining, roughly 1%, is from non-commercial user groups. Stutz says versions of this bill have repeatedly failed going back to 1993, well before she was elected. Last week was the first time it's cleared the legislature.
And then it goes to the governor. That is the furthest that bill has ever gotten, and I'm pretty excited. Being this is the 12th year I've carried it.
She says one main interest group has repeatedly stymied it, the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. The association argues the bill is unnecessary because there are already ethical procedures for conflicted members in place. In written testimony to the legislature, the association said allowing a conflicted board member to, quote, have influence over how allocations or regulations are interpreted or implemented, even if the influence isn't a final vote, is inappropriate, end quote. A spokesperson for the governor says Dunleavy will review the bill before deciding what to do. Next up, at least 16 candidates are vying to be the next governor of Alaska in this year's primary election. One of those, Republican candidate Adam Crum, came through Kodiak earlier this month. KMXT's Davis Hovey spoke with the former State Revenue and Department of Health Commissioner on April 14th and has this report.
Adam Crum, born and raised in Alaska. I was born in Homer. I grew up in Anchor Point, so... Little coastal community, we joke that Anchor Point's a village on the road system. But running for governor and threw my name into the ring after a very diverse career.
How would you address or intend to address some of the issues that are plaguing the commercial fishing sector as a whole? I mean, poor ex-vessel prices, processors consolidating, shutting down, Russian seafood impacting the markets, et cetera, et cetera.
I had a friend and advisor early on in this process said, Adam, don't be an expert on fish. You can't. This is a subject that there's so many people that their entire livelihoods and generations of time arguing and fighting about this stuff. And so I've tried to just educate myself as much as possible and to learn from all sectors. There's not a lot of levers that the governor actually has, especially because most of our issues are dealing with international waters and treaties and other countries. And the goal is to try to actually learn as much as possible. My being a science background, I do appreciate the value of science and having a direct science-based initiative that is objective as possible. We need to try to actually come back to neutral and recognize that who we're fighting against is not necessarily out-of-state corporations, as they say, but it's really your friends and neighbors. These are fellow Alaskans. And I don't have any good answers on that other than the fact of trying to keep the rhetoric down and to make sure that we're looking at this from an objective viewpoint to try to find answers and try to make sure that we are actually showing action.
And talking more about rural Alaska, obviously the cost of living is high in Alaska, period. But especially for rural communities, you know, we've seen struggles with the housing market and the cost of fuel is going up, the cost of groceries, obviously, et cetera. But how would you sort of prioritize cost of living as governor?
You have to prioritize where the population is. And the reason is, the question was, how do you actually drive down shipping costs from bringing things either on containers or barges down here to Kodiak? And the reality is, the more strength and diversified the economy is on the rail belt, where 70% of the population is, that means goods are cheaper into Anchorage, and therefore it's cheaper down here to Kodiak and then shipped out. The coastal communities do not have the population size to really drive that market share, but if we actually can get it down as cheap as possible getting to Anchorage, that's where we want. And so a lot of what my focus has been on economic development and diversification, a lot of it around infrastructure building.
What do you see as some of the burgeoning industries? I mean, are you focused more on resource development, the LNG pipeline, some other project that maybe we haven't tapped into yet as a state?
My thing that I'm really pursuing, AI data centers. I've talked to the Amazon Web Services head of energy strategy, and I've talked to folks like that, as well as hyperscalers, these groups that build these massive projects. And in Texas, where they're putting these things up, 40% of their operating costs is cooling. 25% is the cost of water. Well, what do we got in Alaska in abundance? We got cold and we got water. We have like 40% of the U.S. surface freshwater. And so we can create this industry that can come in and really fill the gap in all areas of the state. Large size, small size, and my goal is to make Alaska the Silicon Tundra.
As far as education funding goes, where do you stand on the amount that you think is the best, I guess, for base student allocation? What amount would you support and what do you think the funding should be for BSA?
My idea is not to increase the BSA funding. Part of the BSA funding, the most expensive part of that, is the CTE, Career and Technical Education Training. So I would actually break out the CTE funding from the BSA and increase that and do it as a direct line item tied to key performance indicators to school districts, with the goal being that every small town has a fab shop, has a welding shop, has a machine shop.
And my final question is just sort of your one-minute elevator pitch to voters, to listeners. Why should they elect you as the next governor of Alaska?
My two reasons for running are named Ellie and Lucy. I've got little kids. They came late. I still got one in diapers. And I want to build a state that my daughters can grow old in and hopefully my grandkids. And I think that I've met more and more Alaskans that are just tired of this managed decline. We have been stagnant since 2014. We need to actually make sure that we are taking control of our destiny, breaking out of this boom-bust cycle. And the difference between myself and the other candidates, you hear a lot of very similar topics and a lot of same things. No one has my background and experience. The private sector, both as a company owner, as a company founder, exiting companies, running the largest department in the state of health, $3.5 billion budget, 3,500 employees, moving into the finance side and understanding exactly where the money in for the state comes from.
Again, that was gubernatorial candidate Adam Crum speaking with KMXT's Davis Hovey. You can listen to the full conversation online at kmxt.org. KMXT's Davis Hovey also spoke with gubernatorial candidate Jonathan Kreiss Tompkins, a Democrat and a former state legislator from Sitka, during his visit to Kodiak for Comfish.
Jonathan Kreiss Tompkins, a.k.a. JKT, my initials, just kind of got took hold in the legislature, a little shorter to spit out. And I am running to be the next governor for Alaska because I want to be the opposite of Mike Dunleavy in the governor's office. I mean, that's only slightly tongue-in-cheek. I think that's actually a pretty good summary of my sort of outlook on things. I spent 10 years in the legislature. I was a part of the bipartisan coalition that formed in the House of Representatives. And I think that approach and spirit of governance where you have Democrats and independents and moderate Republicans kind of focusing on what you can get done, what you can agree on, is great for Alaska. And I want to see that same spirit of governance in the governor's office. And to put it mildly, that has not been the case the last seven years. And I'd like to change that.
I'm not sure how familiar you are with the industry, but there has been a plague of issues that the commercial fishing industry as a whole, multiple sectors, you know, not just processors or one specific gear, but all sectors are struggling with. So how would you kind of help address some of these issues from the governorship?
I mean, number one, I feel like the current administration has been very hostile to Comfish. Talk with anyone who's participated in the Board of Fish process, and it's eyes wide open about the lack of balance and how, you know, the Board of Fish right now is just dominated by one perspective. I mean, as governor, I want to restore balance on the Board of Fish, and that means appointing people from all user groups, not just one user group. It also means geographic diversity on the Board of Fish. So I think that's incredibly important. Prioritizing port and harbor infrastructure, which is, you know, if you're going to home port a fleet, like, you've got to have a port, and you have finite dollars to invest. And in my mind, investing them in infrastructure, which in turn enables economic opportunity in the form of commercial fishing vessels, permit holders, quota owners, that is the high priority in my mind for infrastructure investment.
Another topic that's always a big attention getter for Alaskans is education, of course. Where do you think the base student allocation should fall, and how do you think the state legislature, government in general, can kind of get to the appropriate amount for the base student allocation?
I think the base student allocation should keep pace with inflation. And it's fallen behind for the last 10 years, which basically means you're cutting education. And when you cut education, you close schools, which Kodiak has seen and communities across the state are seeing. And that started while I was in the legislature. I mean, I was voting to have education funding keep pace with cost and inflation. But partly because of this governor, that ultimately did not happen. And so we need to bring the BSA, the base student allocation, back up to par and have it from there keep pace with inflation. The legislature, I'm hoping, is going to continue to make moves in that direction. And I think there's smart, reasonable approach in the legislature. It's just a real question of the governor's veto pen coming down. I mean, for me as governor, obviously not going to veto education funding and going to use the sort of political capital you have to support it.
And then with cost of living on the sort of goods and services, such as, you know, the price we pay for heating fuel or groceries at the store or shipping costs that go along with that, getting goods to coastal off-road communities, how would you look to help address those costs?
That, you know, the state should be focusing in areas where it can help contain costs for consumers. I mean, I think an area that really comes to mind for that is energy and electricity. And, you know, Kodiak and Sitka are very similar in that we're, you know, almost 100% powered by renewables and also energy independent and control our collective destiny because of hydro and wind. But I think kind of exporting that Kodiak or Sitka model to the rest of the state where you're self-sufficient – you're controlling cost because you're not dependent on the wildly fluctuating cost of fossil fuel, natural gas, or diesel. Just makes so much sense.
Again, that was gubernatorial candidate Jonathan Kreiss Tompkins speaking with KMXT's Davis Hovey. You can listen to the full conversation online at kmxt.org. Last up, Kodiak brown bears are known across the world for being big. But according to a new study published this month in the journal Ecology and Evolution, Kodiak bears harvested by hunters have gotten even bigger over the past few years. As KMXT reports, these study's authors say this means the population is being well managed.
It's a giant male, high up there on that ridge, right in the snow. That's the type of bear that Pat's traveled these thousands of miles to see. And now, the stalk begins.
Anyone who knows anything about Alaska has probably heard of the Kodiak bear. Kodiak bears are a subspecies of brown bear that live only on the Kodiak archipelago. They have drawn hunters from all over the country to the island for decades.
You want to make that first shot count because he's close and he could be on you in a matter of seconds.
According to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, male Kodiak bears can weigh up to 1,500 pounds, making them the largest brown bear in the world. Nate Svoboda, a Kodiak area biologist with the department and a co-author of the study, says that distinction gives them an almost mythical status, especially with hunters.
Hunters who are trying to achieve that goal of shooting a trophy animal, there's no better bear to get, in a lot of their opinions, than a Kodiak brown bear, just because of the sheer size of them.
Fish and Game says there are around 5,000 people applying for just over 300 Kodiak bear hunting permits in the early 2000s, meaning that less than 1% of people who applied got a permit. Svoboda says the number of applicants has since more than doubled.
We get a lot of pressure to increase the harvest, increase the number of permits, increase the opportunity for hunts, but we've maintained the status quo.
Svoboda and the team of study authors wanted to see if maintaining that status quo has affected the size and age of harvested Kodiak bears. They figured that since hunters usually want to target the biggest and therefore oldest animals, the number of older, bigger bears on Kodiak Island would go down. Here's study author Jamshid Parshizadeh, who is a wildlife biologist at Michigan State University.
This is a trophy hunt, right? If we do not have larger bears, it means that larger bears are running out, and that's why hunters are hunting smaller bears.
According to the study, this has been the case for other big game animals across the country, like black bears and bighorn sheep. After reviewing data from 1987 to 2023, the team was surprised to find the opposite result. The average skull size of bears harvested in 2023 was bigger than the skull size of bears that were hunted during the three decades prior. The 2023 bears were also older on average than past year's bears. Parshizadeh says this means the department is doing a good job at managing the population.
This lesson can be learned by other managers elsewhere in this world, that if you have good conservative harvest regulations, you can have healthy and sustainable wildlife populations.
Co-author Svoboda says that the department's refusal to cave to pressure to increase permits and education outreach they've done with hunters and guides have played a role in this success. He adds that the credit should go not just to managers, but to the people of Kodiak, too.
Those guides out there, their livelihood literally depends on the ability to harvest these bears, but they are more than willing, time and time again, to reduce their financial income for the betterment of the bears. It's something that we should be proud of and they should be proud of.
Svoboda says the team is hoping to do more research to figure out whether the fact that harvested bears are getting bigger and older also means that Kodiak bears in general are getting bigger and older. But he says his office has documented a few big boars that look to have died of natural causes over the past few years, a sign that these behemoths are living to old age without ever looking down the barrel of a gun. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving.
If you or someone you know is having thoughts of suicide or experiencing a mental health or substance use crisis, 988 provides connection to free, confidential support. There is hope. The Lifeline works. For 24/7 confidential support, just call, text, or chat 988. This message is brought to you by the Kodiak Area Native Association.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify. Our staff put together KMXT's stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm your host, Catherine Irving. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.